Fisher. Then, the quantum leap from mind to no mind. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Beloved Bhagwan, an Indian disciple of Enno, Kutasandra, on passing through a village, found a monk doing zazen in a small hut he had built. Sandra asked, "What's the idea of sitting here all by yourself?" The monk answered, "I'm meditating." Sandra said, "What is this he who is meditating? What are you meditating on?" The monk said, "I don't know what you're getting at." Sandra said, "Why don't you look at yourself and quieten yourself?" The monk still looked blank. Sandra then asked him, "What school are you of?" "Chinshu," said the monk. Sandra said, "Even the lowest heretics in the India I come from don't fall as low as that. Just to sit emptily and aimlessly, what can it profit you?" One day, Yakusan was doing zazen. Sakito asked him, "What are you doing?" "Not a thing," replied Yaku-san. "Aren't you sitting blankly?" said Sakito. "If I were sitting blankly, I would be doing something," retorted Yaku-san. Sakito said, "Tell me, what is that which you are not doing?" Yaku-san replied, "A thousand sages could not answer that question." The attendant O, together with Rinzai, entered the hall. O asked, "Do these monks read the sutras?" "Not they," replied Rinzai. "Then they're learning Zen?" asked attendant O. "No," replied Rinzai. "Then what on earth are they all up to?" asked O. "They're busy becoming Buddhas," said Rinzai, "becoming patriarchs." O said, "Gold dust is valuable, but in the eye it is injurious." Rinzai said, "I thought you were just a mediocre person."
Manita. The anecdote before me. Needs to be understood in a certain background. It is very sad that Gautam Buddha was born in this country but was not understood by this country. His message was so deep so inwardly, so existential, that the Indian heritage of thousands of years of learning, its scholarship, philosophy, theology, religion, everything became a barrier . Of course, few people understood Gautam Buddha, but very few. Just after 300 years Gautam Buddha died, Alexander the Great came to India. And his historians record they could not find a single enlightened Buddhist. Buddhism has been destroyed by the Brahmins, the Pandits and the scholars, the intellectuals of this country. Because Buddha's message was not intellectual. Thousands of Buddhists left the country, were driven out, killed or burned, but just within 300 years, the greatest man that has been on this land, even his footprints were no more left. Those who escaped alive reached to China, to Tibet, to Korea, to Taiwan, to Japan, all over Asia. It is a strange and sad story that India gave the birth of one of the greatest men of the world, but the mediocre masses of India could not understand. The distance was too much. The distance was between the mind and no mind. Gautam Buddha is a quantum leap. He does not teach you any theology. He simply wants you to be. Neither acting nor inacting, but just being. He has no gods to preach you to. He has no rituals to be followed. He is the first man in the world to make freedom of being as the ultimate right of every living creature. Obviously, the very ancient tradition of Indian scholarship could not tolerate him. But in his presence, few blessed ones drank as deeply from his well as possible, as his body was dead, his last incarnation was finished, and he became a part of the total existence. India goes on proclaiming itself as the land of Gautam Buddha without seeing the point that you kill him. Of course, you kill him with your sophistication, not like Jews crucifying Jesus, or Greeks poisoning Socrates. You did it in a more subtle way. By not understanding him, this anecdote has to be understood against this background. An Indian disciple of Inno Putta Sanjo, on passing through a village, found a monk doing zazen in a small hut he had built. Zazen means just being neither doing anything nor not doing anything, but just being an utter silence. Sanjo asked, "What is the idea of sitting here all by yourself? It is not only Sanjo, it has been asked by this whole country, and it is being asked today by the whole world. This question is significant. What is the idea of sitting here all by yourself?" The monk answered, "I am meditating." Now, before entering into the anecdote deeper, you have to understand that there is no word which can translate zazen, meditation is just a far away echo. Because a word is needed only if certain experience requires it. In the English language there are three words: concentration, contemplation, meditation. But all three words point to an object. You can ask on what you are concentrating, on what you are contemplating, on what you are meditating. Zazen comes from the Sanskrit root dhyana, because Gautam Buddha did not use Sanskrit as his language to make his existential statement that Sanskrit is the language of the scholar. It has never been the language of the people. He chose to speak in the language of the people amongst whom he was born. The name of the language he used is Pali. In Pali, the Sanskrit dhyan becomes dhan. It happens in every language the scholars, the rabbis, the roshis, the pandits, they speak a language with perfection. Although their language is dead, but only something dead can be perfect, as the language comes to the people, living people, it becomes more rounded. It takes changes. Dhyan becomes dhan. And because the Buddhist Bodhidharma and others who reached China, Chan turned into Chan. Words moved from one language into another, then certainly they take a different shape and a color which was not originally there. And when Chan reached Japan, it became Zen. This Zen is not translatable, because it is not concentrating on something. It is not contemplating on something. It is not even meditating on something. It is just being. It is a subjective experience without any object. We use the word meditation in a very arbitrary way, because there is no other word in English. But you have to understand that we are giving meditation a totally new meaning, which it does not have in English language. It cannot, because the West has never entered into subjectivity. It has been continuously concerned about the objective. That has been its concern, not this. The far away has been its concern, but not the obvious. The other has been its concern, but not oneself. So when the monk, remember he is an Indian, his name must have got changed into Japanese, Kucha Sanjo, immediately asked, "What is the idea of sitting here by yourself?" The monk answers, "Meditating." Sanjo said, "What is this? Who is meditating? What are you meditating on?" The very question, what you are meditating on, what is this? Who is meditating? In this small question, both the Western attitude and the Indian attitude are expressed together, but not the approach of Gautam Buddha. The moment you are sitting silent, doing nothing, the Hindu thinks he has found the soul, the self. The West simply has not tried sitting silently. It has found great truth about the objective world, but not even a small shadow of the inner. In fact, it denies the inner. It is extraordinary to accept the outer and to deny the inner. It is illogical and absurd. The outer can be outer only if there is something inner. If there is nobody inside you, do you think anything will be outside you. You are the world. Because your consciousness is there, it reflects the whole world around you. But the West has been denying consistently the inner self. Their reasons are that the inner self does not fulfill the scientific requirement. It is just asking a blind man about light, or a deaf person about music. Naturally, the blind man can say, I don't see any light anywhere. Light does not exist. It does not fulfill my requirement. That's what science has been doing. It is imposing its requirements which are inapplicable to the inner. They are perfectly good for the outer. Just because the blind man cannot see the sun does not disappear. And just because the deaf person cannot hear, does not mean there is no sound, no music. Just because you are focused on the outside, does not mean that the inner is non-existential. The West had committed one mistake. Denying the subjectivity, denying the consciousness, India has committed another mistake. By making the inner also just like an object, a self-realization, Atma. Gautam Buddha is perhaps the first revolutionary of the world who says the inner is not a person. The inner is only an eternal living state. Perhaps he is the only man who has asserted the truth. The monk who was meditating said, I don't know what you are getting at. Sanjo said, why don't you look at yourself and quicken yourself? The monk still looked blank. Sanjo then asked him, What school are you of? Sanjo seems to be an intellectual belonging to a certain school of philosophy, religion, theology. The monk's silence is not understood. The monk said, Jinsu. Sanjo said, even the lowest heretics in India I come from don't fall as low as that. Just to sit emptily and aimlessly, what can it profit you? India could not understand the Gautam Buddha for this simple reason. They think that to sit silently just being is worthless. You have to do something. You have to pray. You have to recite mantras. You have to go to some temple and worship a man-made god. What are you doing sitting silently? And that is the greatest contribution of Gautam Buddha, that you can find your eternity and your cosmic being only if you can sit silently, aimlessly, without any desire and without any longing, just enjoying being the silent space in which thousands of lotuses blossom. Gautam Buddha is a category in himself. Very few people have understood him. Even in the countries where Buddhism is a national religion, Thailand, Japan, Taiwan, it has become an intellectual philosophy. The Zazen, the original contribution of the man, has disappeared. Perhaps you are the only people at this moment who are closest contemporaries of Gautam Buddha than anybody else. In this silence, in this emptiness, in this quantum leap from mind to no mind, you have entered a different space which is neither outer nor inner, but transcendental to both. One day Yaku-san was doing Zazen. Sekito asked him, what are you doing? Not a thing, replied Yaku-san. Are not you sitting blankly? Said Sekito. If I was sitting blankly, I would be doing something. Do you see the point? Do you understand this tremendous answer? If I were sitting blankly, I would be doing something still. Retarded Yakusan, Sekitu said, tell me, what is that which you are not doing? Yakusan replied, a thousand sages could not answer that question. Yakusan is right and is wrong. Yakusan is right. It is true, a thousand Buddhas cannot say anything about the transcendental. But I say also that Yakusan is not right, because a thousand Buddhas here can experience it. There is no need to say anything. This blessed evening, we are entering into the transcendental. Now, remember these three words, the outer, which has become a fixation in the West, the inner, which has become a fixation of the Indian mind, and the transcendental, which is the message of the awakened ones. They don't belong to any country, they don't belong to any race, they don't belong to any school of philosophy, they simply belong to existence itself. Those who have gathered here are no more objective, no more subjective, but just drowning into the transcendental, because the transcendental is the only truth. Beyond division, beyond duality. Only a pure sky, a fragrance that you cannot hold in your hand, a silence that dances in your heart, but you cannot say a single word about it. A peace that passes understanding. Yakusan has to forgive me to say that he is right and wrong both. Right because a thousand sages could not answer that question, and wrong because just a single Buddha is the answer. The answer will not be materialized into language. But it can be experienced. And unless you have experienced it, you have wasted your life absolutely. The attendant O, together with Srinjar, entered the hall. O asked, Do these monks read the sutras? Not they, replied Rinjai. Then they are learning Jain? Asked attendant O. No, replied Rinjai. Then what on earth they are all up to? Asked O. They are busy becoming Buddhas, said Rinzai, becoming patriarchs. O said, gold dust is valuable, but in the eye it is injurious. Rinzai said, I thought you were just a mediocre person. Rinzai is a great master and what he is saying is true, that his understanding about the questioner was not right. He has thought him as a mediocre person. But I want to say that even if a man is a genius as far as mind is concerned, it does not make any difference. The mediocre and the genius both are within the mind and the truth is beyond. I have unfortunately to correct Rinzai. The man may not have been mediocre, but the man was not the man of Zen. The man was not in the dimension of the transcendental, which is the only truth there is. Everything is nothing but soap bubbles. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, does the mind only continue to dominate us because of our need to control? It seems to me that all our loveliest moments in life are those experiences when we feel out of control, taken over, obliterated. Yet we continually turn down the invitation to be in that space 24 hours a day. Manisha, it is true that your most precious moments are only those when you are not. When you are obliterated and your understanding is correct, that you continue to hold to the mind because mind gives you the capacity to control. Mind is aggressive. Even in moments when it is not needed, it goes on insisting to control. For example, in love, what is the need of the mind? but it grabs, it wants to control, it is afraid. Perhaps if it does not control, the person may move away. And the strange story is, the more you try to control, the more you are destroying the very fact of love. Love can blossom only when not controlled. When nothing is asked and demanded, then it opens up to its fullest flowering, fills the whole sky with its fragrance. But you cannot have love in your fist. Even air disappears from your fist. And man has lived up to now as a fish. I teach the open hand. Zen is the open hand. Don't control. Do not demand. And all is yours. All the stars and all the flowers and all the oceans and all that existence can give is yours. But you should not be. You should be simply a space, an open hand. Manisha, you may have getting a little intellectual understanding, because if it is existential understanding, you cannot lose it. It is once for all, once forever. Then you cannot say that we forget who you are. You are obliterated. Who can forget it? You are no more. You are filled with the whole. 24 hours. From eternity to eternity, there is no forgetfulness. But if it is only intellectual understanding, then you are bound to forget it. Here, every day you enter into the eternal, you experience it. You rejoice and dance in it. And again, you are back in the mind, which has never given you anything else than misery. Before we enter into the transcendental, The poor bamboos are asking for few laughs. Mike and Paddy are sitting around drinking a few beers. How is your wife looking to you these days? Mike asked Paddy. He went to the beauty shop and got a mud pack, replied Paddy. And for 2 days she looked nice. Then the mud fell off. Do you see, Manisha? This is not a joke, but a Zen story. Dr. Ekdam Quality is feeling that his private practice has been going slowly lately. When in walks Swami herself with a stomach cramp. "Ah, dear," says the doctor, "I am afraid I will have to operate." "What? Really?" cries Swami herself. "Surgery for amoebas?" Yes, don't be worried. It is very common," says the doctor. "It will only cost 20,000 rupees." "What? Really?" cries herself. "Again, 20,000 rupees for gas pains? I can't afford that." "You can afford it," insists Dr. Ekdam Quality. "Just put down 5,000 rupees now, and then it is just 1,000 rupees a month for the next 2 years." "My God," exclaims Herschel, "you make it sound like buying a car." Dr. Ekdam Quality looks astonished and asks, "How did you know I was buying a car?" Both the poet goes into the opticians and says, "I need a new pair of glasses." "I knew that," replies the optician, "as soon as you walked in through the window." Swami Deva Coconut is on the way to MG Road on his motorbike when he is hit by a runaway bullock car. But as luck would have it, he lands up in heaven. After a few days' rest, he asks for some work. Finally, he is given a job in the religious aesthetics department. Here they have a clock for every religious leader on earth, and any sins committed by them are recorded by a tiny movement forward. The Pope's clock has moved only 2 minutes in 68 years. Mother Teresa's clock only 1 minute, and so on. Swami Coconut inquires of the angel in charge, "What about Bhagwan's clock?" "Ah," cries the angel, "we use his clock as a desk fan. 24 hours. Give the first beat and everybody goes crazy. Everybody goes into silence. Close your eyes. Gather yourself in. Just be. This is the message of the 1000th Buddha. It cannot be said but experienced. Go deeper. face, give the beat, and everybody falls dead. Your body can go on breathing, but you go on and on beyond the mind in a clearance where there is just open space, not even you. But just pure silence. What Yaku-san could not say, why 5,000 Buddhas are experiencing in this moment. Go as deep as possible. Don't be afraid. It is your own being. Unknown, unexperienced, unexplored. Open your wings and fly like an eagle across the sun. Drink deep. Nourish yourself with this transcendental experience so that it becomes your 24-hour breathing. Lupe, give the beat. Come back to life. Refresh. Fresh, young, alive. Having no past, no future. Having no body, no mind, but just be. This is your authentic existence. Accept this. Philosophy, metaphysics is nothing but nonsense. Okay, Minister?
Yes, of course.